We're all being asked to cut our carbon emissions by a considerable amount. So how do we do that and keep it fair? Aubrey Mayer is director of the Global Commons Institute, and he believes that contraction and convergence could hold the answer.
We all benefit from being truthful, even when it's difficult. And the truth about this problem, and it is a whole truth when we say it's a global problem, is that it requires a global solution. So contraction and convergence speaks to it at that level. We must stabilize concentrations in the atmosphere as soon as possible. So then the issue is, how do you structure that? Precaution and equity creates the convergence interior of the International Contraction Convergence Agreement, and it admits, subject to that control, the tradability of entitlements to emit. So an imbalance between what you actually emit and what you're permitted to emit is corrected in principle by trade. It's very important to point out that this is not a free-for-all. Contraction and convergence is a framework-based market and not a market-based framework. Now, that said, the key thing that drives us all in this is climate change itself. It's not governments. You can say it's the hand of God, if you like, but the climate is changing, and potentially for not just the worse, but the worst of all possible outcomes. So the real reason for responding to this is none of us want or want our children to go to the wall. So then the question is, how do you harness the huge local enthusiasm of many people now to control their carbon emissions to a global success story, so that they feel and that they can also demonstrate their local success is not overwhelmed by a larger global lottery? You know, will we survive? I've no idea, but hell, it was worth a shot. Contraction and convergence essentially addresses that. It attempts to create a global structure to underwrite the local successes. So you then come back to the example of people who are willing to go on obeying the law, even if it's carbon control law, which is coming soon, and even to try and exceed that law. So you then come to the really interesting attitude problem, or attitude issue, where there's a long tradition of understanding which sees virtue as its own reward. You shouldn't expect to be rewarded for virtuous behavior. It goes perhaps unsung, but you have a clean conscience and a happy heart and so on. And the difficulty is, if you're doing that, you're probably having that reward, but you don't necessarily have a sense that you're operating in conditions where, as a contribution to the larger solution, the value of your solution is actually being recognized in the accounts, as it were. So you then, through the trading, come to the interesting proposition that the virtuous behavior can be mapped by, or have in parallel, a form of venality, which I think is useful. In other words, that you can, in effect, through contraction and convergence, be paid, literally, for underconsumption. So a practical example of this would be, you've got contraction and convergence going within the country and maybe between the countries, or maybe that's the struggle that isn't fully resolved. And instead of taking your car down to the BP petrol station, where you would normally have not only to buy petrol, you will now also have to surrender quota to the value of the petrol that you're buying. You leave it in the garage, you preferably get rid of the thing altogether, and you walk down, or you go down on your bicycle. You don't need to buy the petrol, but you can put the card in to the machine, and BP's petrol machine will in fact pay you out for your unused quota. So you get the good feeling of being green, you get the exercise of walking instead of riding in a car, and you get money for the avoided consumption. Now, there are no end of variants on precisely that, I'm calling it venal motivation. You're being virtuous, but you're being venal. And I think that that is useful in terms of attitudes and politics, simply because when any of us tend to prefer either being purely venal or purely virtuous, a kind of conflict tends to engender between, for example, the church and the state historically, or Catholics and Protestants, and you name it, which tends to end in deep misunderstandings and probably conflict. So if we could all recognize in this sense that being human is primarily being intelligent, and having intelligent systems in this sense, I think, translates into contraction and convergence all the way from globally down to personally. We can all benefit from playing the same game. Some of us will get ahead, doubtless, but essentially, as in any contest, you need rules to make it work. On a football ground, you need white lines to keep everybody on the field. In chess, you need a board to play it on. In music, you need an instrument to play it on. Intense competition happens within orchestras, but they're all playing off the same hymn sheet within the same acoustic structure. And same with contraction and convergence. If we understand that mechanism as working at the planet level and at the personal level, then I think we've a chance of making much more rapid progress solving this problem than if we simply say those kind of structures aren't necessary or they're impossible.
That's Aubrey Mayer.
Interviews from Passion for the Planet.
Copyright Passion for the Planet.
Listen to more interviews online.
Hear health, environment, lifestyle, personal growth and business experts when it suits you. This service is free. Register now at passionfortheplanet.com.
Find out more at passionfortheplanet.com.